Hi, I'm Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Jonathan Wright with the Tacoma Clinic, and we're going to talk about issues of high blood pressure, diabetes, syndrome X, and a lot of other problems that a lot of us have when we start to age. How are you, Dr. Wright?
Far as I can tell, okay, ma'am. I hope you're doing well, too.
I'm great. Thanks for taking the time to be on my show tonight. I really do appreciate it. Before we get started into our interview, I'd like for you to tell my listeners a little bit about you and where they can find you, a little bit about what you do and where they can find you.
All right. Well, thank you. Let's see. Graduated first from Harvard University in 65. That's 1965. And then University of Michigan Medical School in 1969, took an internship residency in family medicine, and that whole time I knew nothing about the natural approach to healthcare. It certainly wasn't taught, and unfortunately mostly still isn't taught in medical schools. I learned in the first couple of years in that residency from some people who came in with health questions. I learned from them that I should be paying attention to the natural approach, as it worked for them, and I've been doing that now for about 40 years. I happen to have, along with a partner, Dr. Alan Gaby, a collection of some 75 to 80,000 reproduced medical journal articles on diet, vitamins, minerals, botanicals, all that sort of thing, mostly on paper, but since the 1990s, when we learned to use computers anyway, I know there was a lot ahead of us. Some of it's in electronic form, too, so quite a database to work from, and been practicing this 40 years. Let's see. We're in Renton, Washington, and it's called the Tahoma Clinic, T-A-H-O-M-A, clinic.com. One can find it there, but I do a radio show here in Seattle that probably reaches a lot fewer people than yours does, Eva, but it's called Green Medicine, and there's an online archive. It's called greenmedicineonline.com. And one can go there, enter any topic they'd like out of about 400 topics. And the webmaster has made it so easy. You click, and it goes straight to the segment of the radio program where that topic was discussed. And if it's several segments, they all come up in a line. And any and all of those segments and radio programs can be downloaded to your own computer, no charge, if you want to hear about them. And lastly, and I'll shut up then, I do a newsletter called Nutrition and Healing. Reaches about 107,000 people, we're told. And it's called Nutrition and Healing. One can reach that through the Tahoma Clinic website if one wants to, that is. It's time for me to shut up, and it's your turn, ma'am.
Well, thank you. I had Dr. Gaby on my show the other day, and he was fabulous.
Oh, isn't he, though? Now,
let
me advertise Dr. Gaby a little bit. That man spent, I'm not kidding you folks, 20 years writing a book called Nutritional Therapy. It has, I'm not kidding again, 14,000 citations to medical journals in there. And really comprehensive. Tells you all about what you can do with diet, vitamins, minerals, and so forth, for a whole variety of problems. And it's so big it weighs 9 pounds. I've told Alan it's good not only for what you learn, but you can do some weightlifting with it and build your muscles.
I actually got a copy of that book, and it's a fabulous book, and it's easy for the average person to understand, even though I understand they're going to be using it for teaching. It's a great book. So, and I guess, where can they find that book, Dr. Wright, do you know?
Oh, just go to drgaby.com, D-R-G-A-B-Y.
Okay.
Now,
all
it
right,
is
so
a little
let's
pricey. It's about $300, so if people want a shorter version, Dr. Gaby and I co-authored a book called Natural Medicine, Optimal Wellness. It's about 4 or 5 years old, but it's still real relevant. If zinc worked in the 1700s, it's going to work in the 1900s and in the 2000s, so that's what I mean by relevant. And it's arranged in a different way. The top 50, the so-called top 50 health conditions that folks get out there are covered each in a little chapter that goes anywhere from 4 to 6 pages. Rather than having to read the whole book, you can just turn to the chapter you're interested in and read up on it there.
And where can they get that? Can they get it from your website?
Oh, that's available online.
At your website, Amazon?
On our website, yes, on our website, but also at all the usual online booksellers.
Okay. We're just going to talk about some random topics of high blood pressure, diabetes, and things. And if you don't mind, I'd like to start with high blood pressure. And I'd like for you to say whatever you have to say about it, and then I have some specific questions I'd like to ask you, if that's okay.
Okay. Well, to start with, as with any other problem, we want to start by looking for the cause, because if we can find the cause, then maybe we'll be able to solve the problem a lot better and more directly. And with high blood pressure, there frequently is more than one cause. Frequently several, in fact. Let's go through them. Now, the ones that people can look at for themselves at home, there's at least a couple of those. One of them is pretty darn simple. It's the balance between potassium and sodium in a person's diet. Now, notice I didn't say sodium causes it. I said, no. I said the balance between the sodium and the potassium. Now, a Dr. Richard Moore came out with a book over 10 years ago, but the silly thing is still really valid. You can just go online and look up Richard Moore, The High Blood Pressure Solution. And what he did for us, which is real nice, is write a book in English, but with all of the citations and footnotes that you might want, showing that if we increase the potassium and bring down the sodium somewhat, why, the blood pressure comes down for many people. Now, for some people, it's just as simple as getting rid of all the sodium chloride, because remember, there's plenty in the food, folks, particularly in animal proteins, and getting a little shaker of potassium chloride, which is a little sharper than the regular salt taste, but it acts like salt, tastes like salt, a little sharper. The reason I said a little shaker is that's all you can find. Down at the store, you can find these great big shakers full of sodium chloride. But to get a potassium chloride salt shaker, you usually have to look for a little one, 4 or 5 ounces, and read the label. Careful, because it should be just potassium chloride, no sodium chloride. You can find that in most grocery stores today. You can find it in your natural food store. A lot of places you can find potassium chloride. And if you want to go further than that, there's a potassium chloride and magnesium chloride that was used over in Finland in a public health miracle over there. And that also helps lower the blood pressure. You just put that all over your food, your potassium chloride salt. You put it all over your food as much as your taste buds will allow, and it won't hurt a thing. To hurt anything with that, you'd have to take half the shaker at once and dissolve it in water and down it. And no. Nobody can stand that. It would taste way too bad. Now, Dr. Moore pointed to some experiments. Let me tell you about just one, but there's others like this. Homes for retired soldiers. Big ones. With different kitchens, because there's so many soldiers. Some of them live in these cabins over here, and some of them live over here, and some of them live over there. And this was in Asia. But even so, they got high blood pressure in Asia. And there's two main kitchens that serve meals to these guys. They're retired. Probably assisted living, too. I don't know. In one kitchen, they took out all the sodium chloride, put in the potassium chloride. The other kitchen, they left alone with the sodium chloride. And all these guys got their meals from those kitchens. You know, in a few months, the retired soldiers eating from the potassium chloride using kitchen, their blood pressure came down by 10 to 15 points on the average. No kidding. Now, of course, the salt shaker or the potassium chloride salt shaker is one way to go. But then take a look at what we're eating. What's got potassium in it anyway? Well, we've all heard this. Our grandma's told us, eat the vegetables, eat those veggies, and some fruits. And the reason I said some will come clear in a bit. So if we change the foods in our diet, emphasizing more foods with potassium, it's always best to go with the food first. But the way people are, especially us guys, we don't always eat our green veggies or any kind of veggies sometimes. Getting that potassium chloride salt shaker is a really, really, really good idea. And we can do it on our home. We don't have to, on our own at home. We don't have to see the doctor. Costs as much as the salt costs you. That's that. So that's one of the big ones for getting blood pressure under control. Number two is vitamin D. No kidding. A lot of us don't know that vitamin D is hypertension has a geographic distribution. Doesn't matter what the ethnic group is. White, black, purple, pink, whatever we got for ethnic groups. That ethnic group always has
I don't know if you're stopping and pausing to breathe or if I can ask a question. I'm just listening.
What's happening now, ma'am?
That's it. I didn't know if you were pausing for a second or if I should ask questions.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I am kind of long-winded. And
no, I'm glad you are. It's great. I'm fascinated by what you had to say, but when you stopped, I didn't know if I was supposed to interrupt and ask questions. I'm listening.
Hey, look, another thing you can do is anytime you really want to hear about something, just break in. I got enough of memory to remember what I was saying and go back to it later, so don't worry about it, please.
Well, it was like you were reading my mind, because that was my first question, was potassium in particular as it relates to diastolic pressure, and that's what you went into. It's like you're a mind reader.
Yeah.
So
I wish
please
I could
go
do
ahead.
That, but I'm glad it worked out. Well, back to the vitamin D. Living around the equator doesn't matter what ethnic group you're in. Your blood pressure is always going to be the lowest if you live on the average now, so that means several people, of course, if you live at the equator. And then if you go north and south towards each pole, why, the average blood pressure in all ethnic groups rises. So the highest blood pressures are the northern and the southernmost populations on the average, and the lowest blood pressures are at the equator. Huh. Well, that was observed years ago, but 5 to 10 years back, a research scientist, a molecular biologist, wrote a wonderful research paper in which he pointed out, here is the place where vitamin D keeps one segment of our DNA from overexpressing itself and leading to high blood pressure. I'll repeat that, folks. That's real important. Here is the place in the human genome where vitamin D, if sufficient, can keep that particular piece of the genes from expressing itself, overexpressing itself, let's put it that way, because it's got to express itself a little or it wouldn't be there, but it keeps it from overexpressing itself and leading straight to high blood pressure. And then you know what that man wrote? It's so sad. He says, now we've got to come up with a synthetic analog of vitamin D that'll do the same thing. And he wrote that right in English, and you think he'd be ashamed of himself. Why not just use vitamin D?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you might know the man was working for a patent medicine company. And by the way, for those who think that patent medicines don't exist anymore, they sure do. Anytime a doctor gives you a prescription, it's very likely it's for a patented molecule. Yeah,
so
really.
I have one question here I want to ask, to educate my listeners. Whenever companies make a pharmaceutical, aren't they usually mimicking something natural?
What they're doing is just what that writer said. They're making a a false takeoff on something natural. You're exactly right. One of the ways that they come up with patent medicines these days, and I keep calling them patent medicines because that's what they are. They are molecules that can be patented. The law says that you cannot patent a natural molecule, and therefore you can't make giant big bucks on it. So they look for something they can patent, and they go through what they call libraries, quote-unquote, of natural substances, looking for a natural substance that has effect on something. And once they find it, do they use that natural substance? No. They make a mimic, a pseudo version, a phony version of that natural molecule, so they can patent it. Now, the law says you can't patent it if it's natural. So just think about it, folks. If it wasn't found in nature or on this planet before somebody decided to tweak nature a little, that's the definition of a space alien molecule. What's that?
It always fits. Like when you take pharmaceuticals, it's like putting a square peg in a round hole. You're going to have side effects because there's something left over the edges of the square peg.
And here comes the side effect. You're absolutely right. So, again, one doesn't need this patent medicine. One needs vitamin D, in this case, to slow down that overexpression of that part of the genetic code that can lead to high blood pressure. And that's not the only way we get high blood pressure, is from that one little piece of DNA. It's just one way we can do it if it overexpresses. Just mentioned, we can also get it if we don't have enough potassium. How much vitamin D? Well, I happen to live in the Seattle area, so do many of the folks I work with. And for the average adult, it takes a minimum of 5,000 units of vitamin D a day to even get close to what's called the tropical optimal. And all the tropical optimal means is the same blood level a person would have if he or she lived in the tropics and went outdoors and got enough sun but didn't get burned. It's the tropical optimal, and that's between 60 and 100 nanograms. That's a real teeny amount, nanograms per milliliter. So, folks, if you got high blood pressure, go get yourself checked for vitamin D in your blood. It's a simple test. It's called 25-hydroxyvitamin D, 25-OH vitamin D. And if you're not between 60 and 100, you're not at the tropical optimum. So you got to use, that is, if you want the vitamin D effect on your blood pressure, you got to use enough vitamin D to get yourself into the tropical optimum. And that's just a fact, and that's the way it goes. But we can do vitamin D for ourselves, and vitamin D is cheap, cheap, cheap. Even the highest quality stuff is inexpensive. So those are the two things, the potassium and the vitamin D, that we can do for ourselves. Now let's go into another. So I was speaking of causes. One cause: poor balance between sodium and potassium. Number two cause: not up to the tropical optimum in vitamin D. Now let's go to the third cause, which unfortunately is way too common. Every time somebody comes into our clinic and they've got themselves some high blood pressure, we check them for toxic metals. We check cadmium. We check lead. We check all the toxic metals you can think of. How's that done? Well, it's a little bit of trouble. It's not something you can do for yourself at home. We use what are called chelating agents. These are semi-synthetic amino acids that are safe to be used in the human body, even though they're semi-synthetic. They're put into an IV bottle and dripped into the system. And what do chelating agents do? The shape of the chelating molecule is just exactly right to grab onto toxic metals. By the way, it also grabs onto some of the normal metals, too. And so, for the long run, if we're going to keep repeating this, we have to put the normal minerals back.
So
but
what
the short
aminos
run, it's just
are
a test.
What aminos do you use to do that? I'm curious.
One of them you've probably heard of. It's called EDTA, for ethylene diamine tetracetic acid. And by the way, you eat enough food can labels, you'll find that's used as a food preservative, EDTA. It'll be right there on the label of certain foods, and it is relatively safe. The other one, something called DMPS, now that's a sulfur-containing amino acid, or semi-synthetic amino acid, and that one just really likes to grab mercury. And so many of us, unfortunately, particularly when we were small and didn't know any better, the mercury put in our teeth. You'd think the adults doing it would have known better. My goodness, is even the FDA has told pregnant women they shouldn't eat tuna because there's too much mercury. Excuse me, what are we doing putting mercury in little kids' teeth? But that's another story. So anyway, we use EDTA and we use DMPS, and the infusion takes 40 to 50 minutes. And then all the urine's collected for the next 6 hours. Person does that on their own, of course. A little bit of that sent off to a lab that checks toxic metals, called a toxicology lab. And I'm sorry to have to tell you, Eva, but over and over and over again, a high proportion, it's in the 70s and 80s, of people with high blood pressure. Oh, my goodness, look at all this toxic metal comes out. And the first thing people want to know is, where the heck did that come from? Well,
how long do you have to do that drip? Month or week?
What's that?
How often do you have to do that drip to get it to work?
Okay. The test takes 40 to 50 minutes, and it's just done once. And if you're lucky and you don't find much toxic metal, that's it. That's all. But unfortunately, people with high blood pressure, 70 to 80% of them, not kidding, all this toxic metal comes out, oh my goodness. And then to get it totally removed in any reasonable length of time, a person has to repeat that drip sometimes 15 times, sometimes 20 times, sometimes 30 times. I'm not kidding. When there's that much lead or mercury in a person, it takes that long to get it out. And remember, it brings out normal minerals too. So every third or fourth or fifth time, pending, we just have to put back all the normal minerals and not take anything out. Otherwise, a person can get too depleted on normal minerals, and that wouldn't be good. But it takes a while. Now, there is a technique around called oral chelation, where you swallow some pills, and it brings out toxic metals. But the higher the toxic metal level that's found, the longer that oral chelation is going to take. It can take, instead of, let's say just for example, 20 of the IV chelation drips, which would take, if it's done twice a week, 10 weeks, which would take twice that long if it's done once a week, and then we have to put in some replacement minerals in between times. Well, that takes 3-4 months. Oral chelation, if the toxic metals are that high, can take 2 or 3 years. No kidding. It works, but it takes a long, long time. And it has to be done very, very carefully, the oral chelation. Keep it away from food, otherwise it'll just chelate the minerals in your food, the beneficial ones as well as any toxic ones. So we have to carefully keep it away from food, and there's other precautions too. The intravenous, of course, it doesn't get in the gut, and so it doesn't grab the minerals from the food. It grabs what's in the body. Over and over, particularly people who have not grown up in rural areas have all these toxic metals if they're hypertensive, and those just have to come out. Otherwise, the blood pressure doesn't come down. There is just nailed-down evidence that cadmium, lead, cause high blood pressure. Mercury causes high blood pressure. So it's frequently not just one. And last thing on this thought, never, ever believe anybody who says, oh, do a blood test and check for toxic metals. You won't find any. Even the textbooks say that you only find elevated blood levels after an acute exposure, an exposure that just happened within the last day or 2 or 3 days, because our bodies don't want that toxic metal in circulation, so the stuff is stored away in bones, for example. Bones are famous for being lead repositories. And the mercury, where's that go? Goes to the brain. Wonderful. Goes to lymphatic tissue. So a blood test is not accurate. You have to do this chelation trial and see how much comes pouring out. And if it came pouring out, it had to be in the body, didn't it? Uh-huh.
Well, let me ask you this, and then I want to ask you some more questions. My daughter, we did a metal chelation on her one time for some mood disorders. And we did it orally with Pam Colleen. I don't know if you know her, but Jessica broke out in thousands of little bumps all over her body that almost itched her to death. Does that happen to you when you do an IV chelation like that? Do you have that horrible detox?
It's exceptionally rare. I've been working with that since the 70s and haven't had anybody break out all over. The thing that does come up from time to time is that sulfur-containing semisynthetic amino acid is metabolized in our bodies with the help of molybdenum. And if there's not enough molybdenum in a person's body, they can have a reaction. It's usually a headache, not a rash, but it's usually a headache and fatigue. And so we quickly check the urine if they have a reaction for something called sulfite, which is not fully detoxified sulfur. And if we find that sulfite, okay, that person needs extra molybdenum, and that strengthens the enzyme that metabolizes sulfur, and we don't have any more reactions after they get enough molybdenum.
And what is
molybdenum
that word you're saying?
Molybdenum, M-O-L-Y-B-D-E-N-U-M. Somebody once pronounced it Molly B. Denim, because that's how it's spelled, but M-O-L-Y-B-D-E-N-U-M. And that is only applicable if we find a person's got sulfite in their urine, but there's a real simple little dipstick like you check urine sugar with that you can check and find out if a person's got sulfite in their urine.
Okay.
And if they do, they need more molybdenum.
Okay. I'm going to give you a list. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead, because I was going to launch a different topic.
Oh, well, go ahead. Maybe it's something we need to hear.
Okay. Well, there's three things now. Let's recap them. The sodium-potassium balance, not having enough vitamin D, too much toxic metal in the body, which is so common in people with high blood pressure. And here comes a fourth one. If a person happens to have a family history of type 2 diabetes, how does that get you high blood pressure? Well, if you've got a family history of type 2 diabetes, which about one-third of North America is said to have, is that family history. Not that they've all got type 2 diabetes, but they got the genetic. Then, when those folks who are in that group eat carbs, their bodies make significantly more insulin in response to that than people who are not in a genetic group. And it can be as much as double to quadruple as much insulin. Now, why that happens seems to be a matter of a long-ago history. And that long-ago history goes clear back before farming times, which, as far as we know, is more than 10,000 years ago. First evidence of farming, at least in our cycle of civilization, is about 10,000 years ago in the Middle East and over in Southeast Asia. Before that, everybody's wandering around the planet being hunter-gatherers. You've heard of hunter-gatherers, cavemen, going out there looking for wild game and fish and whatever else they could find to eat, and pulling the leaves off of certain plants and digging up roots. But that's what people ate. And guess what? That's kind of a low-carb diet, isn't it? Where's the carb? Well, where the carb comes in is if you lived in the tropics, yep, okay, then there is tropical fruit and stuff. But most of the planet, the carb would come out in the late summer and early fall. What's this carb coming out? Yeah, sure. It came as berries and fruits. And those are mostly summer, early fall. Okay. What's that got to do with anything? Well, we all have noticed that humans tend to have a sweet tooth, and they develop that because they could find that carb. Tastes good. Not only that, it helps us to fatten up. Now, turns out, if your bod can make more insulin in response to carbs than your neighbor in the next cave, why, your bod is going to pack on fat more easily. Oh, well, what's the good of that? Well, now think about it. If you're a caveman or a cave lady and the cold winter is coming, doesn't it make sense if you can get fatter than your neighbor in the next cave and maybe you'll make through the winter time more easily and not die off from being too skinny or starved during the cold winter? Okay. This is research proven, folks. This isn't just theory. Professor John Yudkin, a research scientist and professor over in the UK, rounded up a whole bunch of people in their early 20s, and they had to know for certain whether they had type 2 diabetes in the family or whether they didn't. in a large group, and he had them all live in this dormitory and eat the exact same kind of food. They all had to eat the same food. And by the way, there was plenty of it. No shortage of food. But they all had to eat the same things every day as the other people. And in there was 14 ounces of sugar. Whee! Talk about carb. Now, it sounds like a lot, but it really isn't. All you got to do is drink two of those Poopsie Cola things or Coca-Colas or whatever they are, and you got 14 ounces of sugar right there. Okay, what did he do? He weighed them before and he weighed them after. Now, on the average, 20-year-olds, and this is 20-year-olds, they don't have type 2 diabetes yet. The 20 years old who came from the families who did not have any type 2 diabetes anywhere, on the average, gained 3 pounds on that diet. And the 20-year-olds who came from the families who had type 2 diabetes in their family gained, on the average, 9 pounds from the exact same diet. Those are the people who walk by the bakery, sniff the stuff, and gain weight. So it is proven. You got this high insulin response, and it packs fat on you easier than somebody else in response to carbs. Now, what's that got to do with high blood pressure? Well, a number of years back, research scientists figured out that that extra insulin response drove the blood pressure up by making the kidneys retain sodium and making a little bit more excretion of adrenaline and noradrenaline. Those are things that constrict blood vessels and drive the blood pressure up and the sodium retention. We know what that does. And by the way, that high insulin signal goes straight to the liver and turns on an enzyme that makes cholesterol. And that's what's sometimes called syndrome X, sometimes called metabolic syndrome. Namely, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heading toward diabetes. Now, when our bodies make too much insulin, if it just happens in the late summer and early fall, okay, we can get over that. Just wait till next year. But now we've got so-called civilization. And sometimes don't you wonder even if this really is civilization? But that's another story. And there's carbs available all year round. So those people who are from the families with type 2 diabetes, their bodies are making too much insulin all the time. All the time, every day, year round. And the body can't handle all that, so it develops something called insulin resistance. But the pancreas just responds by making even more insulin to overcome the resistance, because it's got to get the sugar from the bloodstream into the cells to burn for energy. So the body makes more resistance, and the pancreas makes more insulin, and the body makes more resistance, and the pancreas makes more insulin. And that literally goes on from a person's teens until they get type 2 diabetes, because sooner or later, and it's 30, 40, 50 years later, the insulin resistance is so strong that the even with all that extra insulin, it can't get enough sugar into the cells. And so now we got type 2 diabetes, which is high insulin and high sugar. And at the same time on that journey, the high insulin has been driving up the blood pressure for some people, the cholesterol for other people, both of them for many people, and a couple of other effects too. One of them is called central obesity. And that's a picture of the metabolic syndrome, syndrome X, central obesity, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and tendency to type 2 diabetes. But something that's been added to that recently, there are 4 research papers out there that show that osteoarthritis, just plain old my joints are falling apart. This is not rheumatoid arthritis. This is degenerative, like we get in our knees and our hips. Osteoarthritis overlaps with metabolic syndrome 80% of the time, folks. So we can prevent osteoarthritis too. But what we got to do is we got to recognize if we're from families with type 2 diabetes in the family, if we're from that family, that we have got to go more toward a caveman diet, a so-called paleo diet, because that cuts down on a lot of the carb. Not all the carb. We don't have to eliminate it all. But remember mention that high blood pressure for some people means going low carb is going to be helpful. And those are the people who have type 2 diabetes in their families. It'll
and
make a difference.
Does that include
for
things like brown rice and as well? I mean, should it just be no carbs? Or is there, are there
no. What carbs could a caveman eat? Well, let's see. Caveman could dig up root vegetables. Okay. Caveman could eat fruits in season, right? Or cave ladies too. I don't want to be discriminating here, cavemen and cave ladies. The point was, there's not carbs all the time, and it's only certain selected carbs. And there's a really good book out there called The Paleo Diet. I didn't write it, but it's a good book. And it goes through all that. And one thing cavemen did not do was to grow grain. So and that includes rice and wheat and all the other grains. So if a person is going to be really strict, and by the way, having said that, what I ask people to do is be strict for a while, see what good it does for you, and then try to lighten up and see if it makes things worse again, you know? Observing our own bodies is the best way to stay healthy.
Does this play a role with digestion problems and stomach acid?
Not too terribly, no. Mm-mm. This is another one of the major causes of hypertension. But insofar as stomach acid and digestion, people frequently have trouble with stomach acid and digestion the older we all get. We all know that grandpa and grandma complain about their digestion a lot more than the kids do. So some of that is just the passage of time. There are a couple of categories of kids who frequently have low stomach acid, but that has got nothing to do with high blood pressure. That's got more to do with eczema and asthma, which is a topic for another time.
Okay.
But on the high blood pressure, there's one more thing to go over, and that is, believe it or not, there's a certain type of chiropractic adjustment that can help high blood pressure. Now, there's been studies on chiropractic and blood pressure, and some of them have been quite negative, didn't make any difference. But there's one particular type of chiropractic manipulation that if you need it, and not everybody who needs a chiropractor needs this, but one particular type that if you need this type has been studied and shown to significantly lower the blood pressure. And that's if we have a misalignment in the upper two vertebrae on the whole spine. They're called the atlas and the axis. They're the
I
ones
had
right
that
up
done
under
last
the skull bone.
Week. It was amazing.
You had that done last week.
Uh-huh.
Tell me about
it. Well, I had these really bad headaches in a certain spot in my head, and I had a really bad pain on my left shoulder with a funny knot. And I tried everything to fix these headaches. And so, plus I have high blood pressure. That's why I'm so interested in what you have to say. And there just happens to be a chiropractor where I live that has one of these special machines. And, well, first I got an x-ray of my head, and then he did some measurements on it with, like, a slide rule or something. And then this thing had this, it looked like a long needle or something, like you would use to extract bone marrow. Except it didn't go into you. He just put it up to the edge of your head, and I guess he pushed a button, and it felt like he shot energy through it. I didn't feel anything from the thing. I just felt a little pulse. And all of a sudden, the C1 and C2 popped back in place, and immediately my headache went away, and I felt fabulous. My blood pressure dropped down like 10 or 15 points, maybe.
There you go.
And it was great. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it.
Well, for folks who are listening, one of the ways you can tell if you've got that misalignment right up underneath the skull, it's got nothing to do with feeling up underneath your skull. Instead, you lay on your back, maybe on the bed, and put your ankles out over the edge of the bed, and try to put your ankle bones together, and have somebody look and see if your leg length is roughly the same on both sides. It should be, but the more off it is, if it looks like, oh, look at that, one leg is protruding a quarter, a half, or more of an inch below the other, okay, you need one of those chiropractors who works on the C1, C2.
That was really amazing.
And that's the
thing.
Upper cervical vertebrae.
Okay, can I ask you some other questions? Is there anything else, any other causes, before I ask? We've got about 15 minutes.
Well, I'm sure there are, but right now I'm not familiar with them, because if we go through all those things, the sodium-potassium balance, the vitamin D, getting the toxic metals out, checking to see if we have insulin resistance, and by the way, there is a test that you can run on a teenager, and you can tell them they're going to get diabetes in 40 years. I'm not kidding. It just checks your insulin resistance. More often, we're running it on people in their 30s and 40s, and all it does is to act like a normal glucose tolerance test, except you check the insulin at every point along the test, not just the glucose, and you can see, look at that insulin. Wow, it's going way high. Those are the people who are headed for type 2 diabetes, and also it's going to bring up their blood pressure. So there's that, and then there's the chiropractic adjustment. Person goes through all that things, those things, the very large majority of the time, they can get their blood pressure under control, and I'll shut up, and it's your turn again.
Okay. I'm gonna read off a bunch of questions that I have. Remember that we only have about 15 minutes or 20 minutes. And
sure.
You pick the ones that you feel most comfortable answering. And I just want to tell people this, too, because I forgot to do it at the beginning. Dr. Wright is a medical doctor, and of course I am not. That being said, we are not trying to diagnose you. We're not trying to treat you. We're just providing you with information. Just information. It's up to you to do your homework and take this information to your own healthcare provider. Just want to make sure we're covered there. Okay, here are my list of questions. How do we support our kidneys if we have that potassium issue? What are the roles, if any, of the B vitamins, particularly 12 and folate, K2, C? Is there anything that we can do maybe with for arterial flexibility like zinc? What are the roles of taurine, carnitine, perhaps? Is niacin, does that do anything for hypercholesterolemia? And what is the role of gallbladder with high blood pressure, if any? And you can pick out which ones you like.
Well, I'll do like folks usually do and start with the easy one, and that is niacin and high cholesterol. Now, remember, if we got high cholesterol and we happen to have type 2 diabetes in our family, it's usually coming from that heavy insulin signal. So please, folks, don't start with niacin. If you've got type 2 diabetes in your family and high cholesterol, start by finding out if you got a high insulin signal and work on that. But let's say you don't. Let's say you're in the two-thirds of families who don't have type 2 diabetes anywhere in the family they know of, and the cholesterol is high. Niacin is one of the first things to think of. Why? Because it actually had been studies published right there in the medical journals showing that when compared with statins, and those are all those patent medicines they want to give you to bring your cholesterol down to as low as it should be a lot of times, compared with statins, head-to-head comparison, the niacin led to regression of thickness in the wall of the arteries. Now, regression just means it got thinner. The statins did not. They slowed the progression, but they did not actually lead to regression. Whereas the niacin not only controlled the cholesterol like the statins do, but it led to regression. So why wouldn't you want the niacin? It works better. It gets your cholesterol under control, and it helps to thin down the thickened wall of the artery. The statin gets your cholesterol under control, but my goodness, the thickened wall of the artery just keeps progressing. So niacin's obviously preferable. Now, niacin, of course, is the stuff that some teenagers at Halloween hand to the other teenagers and give them this bright red flush if they take too much of it, and they get itchy and scratchy. It's not comfortable. That's why in the natural food stores and compounding pharmacies, there is time-release niacin, which, as it tells you, releases over a period of time and doesn't give you the itch, scratch, or flush. At least most people it doesn't. I happen to be an exception. There's a very few percentage of this out there, 1% or less. Doesn't matter if the niacin time release. We still get a flush from it. But most people don't. Only thing to watch out for with niacin is if we start getting a little nausea, that's the liver saying too much niacin for me. And we got to back off because we don't want to make our livers feel bad. And if we start getting nauseated when we're taking niacin, that's what's doing it. So that's that question. And then you asked something about kidneys, and what you want to know about kidneys?
The potassium sodium issue and supporting kidneys.
Oh, okay.
I don't really know how to ask the question the right way, but I figure you'd know.
Actually, too much sodium isn't good for the kidneys, but I cannot tell you the other side of that, that, oh, yeah, potassium's really good for your kidneys. Potassium's good for all the cells in the body, and so is sodium. It's just a matter of balance. And if usually many, many people are way balanced on the side of sodium and not enough potassium, and that is not good for the kidneys.
So I used to supplement with potassium, like not the kind in the salt, but just the regular potassium chloride supplement, and that ran my blood pressure up. But I know that it's potassium that I need, especially when I hear you. So what form of potassium is safe if you can't take that kind? What's the closest to the kind being in food? Does that make sense?
Well, that makes sense, but I'm a little surprised because it's pretty rare. And I heard you, it happened to you.
It made my nose... blood shot out my nose and literally squirted all the way across the room.
My goodness, how much did you take, ma'am?
Just whatever comes, like, in one pill. I forget how it comes, but just one. I was taking one Tylenol today.
And that was from the natural food store?
Yeah.
Okay, it wasn't a prescription, because it is available on prescription, too. That's why I'm asking.
No.
Well, if it was just one... there's somebody's regulation out there that says the most they can put in any one capsule is 99 milligrams.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah, and that is such a small amount. If you get the prescription amount, the silly things have anywhere from 600 to 1,000 milligrams per pill. So what I'm thinking is you must have some kind of a very unusual sensitivity. What you might try is that there are companies out there that put out potassium citrate, no chloride.
Okay.
And that might be gentler on you, but I can't guarantee that.
That resonates with me. It felt right, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, there's a couple companies that have that. One of the ones that we work with a lot, simply because it's put together by a company that does not put any fillers, binders, anything. What's in the capsule is just the pure stuff, and that's called Thorn, with an E on the end.
Thorn? But, T-H-O-R-N-E?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
And that one is just the pure potassium citrate, no filler, no binder, no nothing, and that would reduce the chances of you reacting to filler or binder, of course.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. How about taurine and carnitine?
Okay. I can't say I'm impressed with those for high blood pressure at all.
Okay.
But what I am impressed with them for, taurine and carnitine, is they're real good for the heart. Now, one of the things L-carnitine does is to enable the heart cells to burn for energy what are called free fatty acids. Usually, cells burn mostly blood sugar. But you put in some carnitine in there, and those same heart muscle cells can burn free fatty acids, too. So it gives them an extra energy source. And the heart cells could always use an extra energy source. Taurine, that's an amino acid that, far as anybody can tell, has a major function in regulating electrical activity, electrical impulses. In big doses, it helps a lot of kids not have so many seizures. And that's, as you know, abnormal electrical impulses in the brain. A lot of the taurine in the heart goes to regulating the electrical activity of the heart, so it's good for that, but it regulates it in a normal way.
Okay. What about K2? What does that do, if anything, for blood pressure or your arteries?
There is animal research and a little bit of people research on vitamin K2, and folks, if you're into this, the most effective form of vitamin K2 is something called MK7. It has this function at a much smaller dose than, quote, regular, unquote, vitamin K2. So MK7 is the usual one that's used for this. Now, okay, here we go with the animal and a little bit of human research. In experimental animals, if you put them on a really low vitamin K diet, why, they start losing calcium from the bones and they start building up calcium in the arteries. And then if you take those same experimental animals and put them on the MK7 form of vitamin K, well, what do you know? They start losing some of the calcium from the arteries and they start getting more calcium in the bones. It's almost as if you did a shift from bones to arteries and back again by making them low in the diet to start with and then later on putting a bunch of it in. Now, by the way, that same first step has been found to pertain to human ladies. Most of this work was done in Japan. The lower the vitamin K, the more osteoporosis and the more arterial calcification they had. Did anybody try in humans reversing that? They sure did. But in this case, they used a big dose of vitamin K1. Now, why they did that, I don't know, because the MK7 is more effective. But these researchers used K1, and doggone if they didn't get some reduction in arterial calcification in ladies. So those are the K vitamins. They've got a lot to do.
So some people say that, I was talking to someone about this K2 the other day, and they said to me, oh, well, that makes your blood thicker. Is that true?
No. That is a total misconception. It really is. Where that comes from, if you happen to be taking a patent medicine called, a formerly patent medicine called Coumadin, the way it thins the blood is by literally poisoning out vitamin K. And vitamin K is essential to normal blood coagulation. So if you're taking Coumadin, which is supposed to poison out your vitamin K, and then... And I did say poison out because Coumadin is also known as rat poison. Then you also are told, don't take any vitamin K because it'll make your blood thicker. Well, that's the only occasion in which it will make your blood thicker is if you happen to be taking Coumadin, which is supposed to poison it in the first place. But if you're not taking Coumadin, you can take an absolute large quantity of vitamin K and your blood will not get any thicker. It only helps the blood to coagulate normally, and it will not make you what's called hypercoagulable. No way.
Thank you for clearing that up, because I was confused about that one. Is there anything else? We've got like 5 minutes. We didn't say anything about fish oil, but is there anything you want to talk about fish oil?
Well,
I don't know if that was something important, but we've got 5 minutes.
One of the questions. Yeah, let me go over that. Hello?
I'm here.
Yeah. Let me go over that as quick as I can, because that's one of the most common questions that comes up on the radio program I do out here. And just incidentally, folks, it's streamed live online Saturdays noon to 2 Pacific on KVI 570 AM. So one can hear that any place. And then there's the archives of the show called greenmedicineonline.com. But to the question that we get so much of, and that is, how can I thin out my blood without taking Coumadin? And what I ask people is, didn't you know that some researchers found out 30 years ago that if you take a very large amount of fish oil and you do that for a while and then you cut yourself, that you're going to bleed to death unless you apply a very heavy-duty pressure tourniquet? Fish oil is that effective, but it does take about 6 tablespoons a day, folks, for that to happen, and very few people are going to take 6 tablespoons a day. So the next question is, how much can I safely take? A person can safely take, if they really are concerned and want to get that blood more slippery, which is what the oil isn't doing, a person can safely take a tablespoon and a half to 2 tablespoons a day and not make their blood too thin, but they certainly will make it thinner. The platelets won't stick together as readily as they did before. There's something called a platelet aggregation test, and if you do that before and after taking 2 tablespoons of fish oil, you'll find out your platelets don't aggregate as rapidly as they did before, but no, you won't bleed to death either on a tablespoon to 2 tablespoons a day. Having said that, with the fish oil or any oil we take, we must take vitamin E in the form of nixtecophorols if we're going to keep it totally safe. What's unsafe? Well, fish oil has in it essential fatty acids, which are, quote, polyunsaturated, unquote, and that means they're very susceptible to oxidizing. And when that happens, we sometimes get too much what's called lipid peroxidation of cell membranes, unless we got vitamin E around. And vitamin E stops that from happening. Hey, whenever we find oil in nature, we always find vitamin E, but it's got to be vitamin E as mixed tocopherols, not alpha tocopherol, because that's the way it's found in nature, too. So, to answer that question, I'll tell folks, look, 1 or 2 tablespoons a day of fish oil, and with every fish oil tablespoon you take, you got to take at least 400 to 600 units of mixed tocopherol. Now, number two, and I'll go fast as I can, there's an enzyme out there called nattokinase, N-A-T-T-O-K-I-N-A-S-E, nattokinase. It comes from the Japanese soy cheese called natto, and it's been chowed down on in large amounts in Japan for about the last several thousand years. So, it's not dangerous, folks. It's an enzyme. That's what the kinase part means, from the soy cheese, the natto, nattokinase. When that's swallowed, it absorbs into the bloodstream whole. It's not an enzyme that digests food. And what's it do when it's circulating around the bloodstream? I am not kidding at all. You can look it up. It looks for clots. It doesn't do much of anything until it sees a fibrin clot starting to form. What's a fibrin clot? Well, that's the basis of all clots. Fibrin comes from fibrinogen. It forms a network just like a fisherman's net, except micro size. And the platelets start to stick to it, and all the blood cells stick to it. They're all caught in this network, and here comes a clot. Well, if nattokinase is circulating in the bloodstream, it doesn't do much of anything. It's sort of standing there being a guard and waiting for something bad to happen. And if a clot starts to form, bingo, nattokinase goes into action and chows down on the clot.
What's the half-life of it?
There's the rub, because the half-life is only going to be 3, 4, 5 hours. So if a person's trying to get protection with nattokinase, it needs to be taken 4 times a day, and if you get up in the middle of the night, you take it then too. So if a person's got higher blood pressure, is prone to stroke, and is worried about having a stroke or a TIA, they got to be using that nattokinase at about 100 milligrams at least 4 times a day, and one maybe if you get up in the middle of the night. But between the nattokinase, if one puts that together with the fish oil, with the vitamin E, and that's always got to be in there, first place, you're not as likely to clot because you got your fish oil and vitamin E. And second place, if you do form a clot, the natto will eat it.
I would imagine that people must be aware that they should not use any kind of blood thinner without that too, right?
Well, blood thinners do get prescribed. And in my opinion, the fish oil and nattokinase and vitamin E, fish oil and vitamin E and nattokinase are going to work just as well, if not better. But it seems that despite the extensive research on the nattokinase in Japan, and most all of it's translated in English, it seems that nobody's reading it. Because remember, you can't patent this stuff. And if you can't patent it, you can't afford to pay for big ads in medical journals, and you're not going to send representatives around to talk to the doctors. It's a little sad, but that's the case for natural substances all over. And besides that, here's the other big problem, and you probably know about it, and that is the manufacturers of these things are specifically forbidden, and I'm not kidding, this is supposed to be a free country, but they're specifically forbidden from telling anybody the scientific truth about what their natural products would do. If you think I'm kidding, you can look up the letter that the FDA sent to Diamond Foods, because Diamond Foods was publishing on their website some of the 35 studies found in the National Library of Medicine that say that eating walnuts will cut your risk of cardiovascular disease. And FDA threatened to seize all their walnuts if they didn't quit telling people.
That's exactly why I do this radio show. Exactly. Anyway, we're out of time, Dr. Wright, but you are absolutely fascinating, and I thank you so much for taking the time today to come on my show and educate my listeners. And I know you're going to have a new book coming out in the spring about asthma. I'd love to have you back.
Okay, yeah, that's called something like a breakthrough treatment for childhood asthma. I've been doing it for 30 years or so, and About 80% of the kids don't need to be wheezing anymore once we're done.
So would you tell us one more time where we can find you, please?
Our clinic website, we're in Renton, Washington, which is right near Seattle. It's Tahoma, T-A-H-O-M-A, clinic, tahomaclinic.com. So that's one place. Another is greenmedicineonline.com, and that's the archives of the radio show I do here in the Seattle area. And if you don't mind listening to me ramble on, but actually the program, radio program, is mostly a call-in, ask your question kind of program, and then sometimes I ramble. That one is on Saturdays Pacific time, noon to 2, streams online like all the radio programs do, at AM 570 KVI.
Thank you so much, Dr. Wright, again, for coming on my show, and I look forward to having you back when your new book comes out. Have a good evening.
You too now. Bye.
Bye-bye.